Session 161, June 9, 1965, The Early Sessions, Volume 4. I now bid you a most fond good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, I see that we have visitors, and I also bid them welcome. We will not this evening give a broad outline to our friend concerning his health. We are indeed, instead, going to progress in a very slow manner and give him tidbits. If we outline a whole program, then he will plunge into it, and we will have him go more slowly. For the problem already has to do with the fact that he plunges into both dilemmas and solutions, with a desperation that is born from anxiety, if not pure panic. Nor will anything be gained by a patent and speedy program that is not solidly based on understanding, both understanding of the self in particular, and what you may call the mechanics involved in the creation of an illness itself, and in an understanding of those elements which caused the personality to develop the illness. Nor do we want to rid him of one illness so quickly that he still feels a need for it. For in such a case he would indeed very promptly develop another. So, though he may wish that we go quickly, we shall go slowly, for the nature of his own reactions causes in some degree the necessity for the illness. We have in the past discussed in full the manner in which physical matter is formed. We have also discussed the ego, and our friend would do well to read the sessions dealing with the ego and the ego's relationship to action. For one of the basic reasons for the difficulty lies in the fact that the ego of the present personality does strongly attempt to stand apart from action. It attempts to force action and to fight action which it does not initiate. Here we have a blockage. The personage, the present ego, will not acquiesce to action, will not go along with it as part of it, but attempts to force it along its own directions. This will become clearer when passages concerning action and the ego are read. There is an involvement that would seem intense. The ego appears to be extremely intense, but to a large degree this is a deception, for the intenseness is caused by the attempt of the ego not to become involved with action, unless the ego can dominate action. There is no basic trust of the inner self. The personality does not basically recognize or trust the ability of the inner self, and this results in an intense inhibited fear. The ego of the personality does not trust its own inner organisms. It must attempt to stand apart from them and keep an eye on them. The ego does not believe that they are treating it right. The ego is therefore in the present circumstances because it fears itself so solitary, since it has to a large degree cut itself off from its inner self, yet not entirely, for the intuitive still speaks. It has not been drowned completely by any means. Attempting to cut itself off, however, from the wholeness of the whole personality, the ego must strain for its reserves of energy, for in a large measure it refuses to accept the energy of the whole personality that is available to it. It will be our concern here, therefore, to aid the personality to discover and use these resources. I will have more to say concerning the manner in which the organic illness has been accepted by the ego as a part of the ego's self-image. This acceptance does indeed take place in that area of the personal subconscious that is closely allied to the ego. But this illness is not so accepted by the whole self, or by the deeper layers of the personality, although certain general tendencies from past lives have aided the personality to strike out physically against his own organism in such a manner. I will now suggest your first break, and as I have said many times, do not break up, for then I should have to pick up the pieces. Resuming Seth, it is precisely because the inner vitality is not accepted by the ego that when it is acknowledged by the ego, it seems so explosive. This ego attempts, to stand aside and to deny the inevitability of change. The ego, in this case, as in many cases, attempts to maintain stability and permanence at all costs. This ego in particular, and many egos, consider that the self is the ego alone. The ego considers that, therefore, it must maintain stability and permanence. It therefore attempts to become rigid, because it considers itself the main representative of the self. It attempts to deny the inner emotions, because the changeability of these emotions would seem to threaten its own permanence. It does not want to change. Therefore, any seemingly small incident will tend to bring forth the explosion of these emotions quite against the ego's inclination, precisely because the ego denies them so vehemently. The harder the ego attempts to hold down the emotions, the more explosively will they show themselves upon the least provocation, and the more the ego will attempt to hold them down, and the worse the ulcer becomes. This need not be. This is why there appears to be two such diverse tendencies that show themselves. The personality is indeed divided. The ego fights the inner self, which means, of course, that the self fights against itself. Reactions will therefore appear to be intensified. Nevertheless, this intensification is a pretense that one part of the self plays upon the other part. For the very intensity of the emotional reaction on the part of the ego to even small stimuli allow the ego to say to itself, "I feel deeply, therefore I know the depths of myself." And this sham allows the ego to continue denying those inner emotions in an effort to maintain its permanence. What the personality must be led to see is that any real permanence would indeed be the death of the ego and the personality. For as we know, the ego is not the same today, in your terms, as it was yesterday, nor yet as it will be tomorrow. That I continually changes. The ego is indeed but one part of the self that speaks for the other portion of the self. But when it tries to speak for itself only, then indeed its words become meaningless, and the words become threats to the rest of the self. The discipline required in following our program as it develops, that discipline will itself represent the first steps to recovery. In other words, the apparent intensity of the egotistical reactions is a sham on the part of the ego to hide the fact that it refuses to become involved with action as a whole because it fears for its permanence. When the ego understands, and it will, that it is a portion of the whole self and itself a part of action, then indeed it will not fear for its own permanence, for it will realize that being a part of action, its very nature is dependent upon change and vitality and value fulfillment. The passages will become clearer as the personality becomes better acquainted with other portions of our sessions. There are here indeed other psychological and surface reasons for the illness, and also deeper reasons for the tendency toward this particular type of illness. I now suggest your break, and I do myself indeed enjoy your pleasant summer evening. I would like to make it plain here, however, that on a surface psychological level, the personality plunges into activity, and it is for the present this portion of the personality with whom we must deal. Nevertheless, beneath there is a denial of involvement and a strong desire for permanency, both of which are repressed, and the stronger the efforts put forth by the ego to repress these tendencies, then these tendencies will explode with inadequate stimuli. There will be an overaction on the part of the ego to compensate for the refusal to accept involvement on deeper levels. Now indeed take your breaks. One more point. The ulcer, for example, has reality upon many levels and must be dealt with in a like manner, for it is not enough to handle it even from the viewpoint of the present ego. For indeed, causes are involved of which the present ego must necessarily be mainly ignorant. The inner self, however, has at its command all these reasonings and all these causes. If the illness did not exist on so many layers, then indeed it would not be so tenacious. The very journey involved in self-discovery, the very self-questioning involved, is indeed part of the process of recovery. the energy being used in the maintenance of the ulcer will already begin to take new channels. The thoughts and anticipations of the personality have already begun to stray from the all-important ulcer to the causes behind it. For in this case, as in many others, we find a strange phenomenon. Jane now pointed, Rob notes, at Bill, her eyes still closed, then made a passing reference to a discussion we had had at break. She smiled and spoke quietly. Seth, it is you, not I, who have been speaking of secondary personalities, and I will not here waste your time and mine in a discussion of why I am not one. Rob notes, now abruptly her voice became strong and loud. Seth, however, we have among us this evening indeed a secondary personality, a strong and savage one. We have here this evening a secondary personality that attempts to rule the complete life of the personality of whom we have been speaking, and its name is Ulcer. For where lies the difference? The personality literally lives its life about the existence of the ulcer. It is hardly worth it, for the personality must be led to see that it itself has created the ulcer, both psychologically and physically in most actual terms, and that it itself can indeed cast it out. The personality can survive well without the ulcer. If this sounds like a foolish statement, it is not. For in many such cases, the ulcer is so concentrated upon, and so much energy is used in its maintenance, and it is used as such a scapegoat, that the personality is loath to be rid of it. It is, however, excess baggage, and can be cast aside, and will be. It is not a part of you like your arm. It is not a part of you like your legs. You can navigate without it, and indeed you shall. It is not, Jane's voice became even louder, part of the image that the inner self gave you. It did not come to you in your chromosomes for duplication. It has been added for the purposes of the ego, and it can be discarded. It did not come to you as an organ like your heart, and your existence is not dependent upon it. The purpose that it served, it no longer serves, and it must now be discarded. I will here suggest a short break. We will then continue the session at your convenience, or if you prefer, we will close it. Rob, we can continue. Seth, continuing. When the ego becomes so rigid, it immediately begins an insidious attempt to block off stimuli, to limit the reaches of perception, to enclose itself in what it considers a safe world. It begins to reject stimuli because stimuli must be reacted to, and it rejects action because action must be reacted to. Therefore, it chooses areas of rejection. The areas it chooses to reject are determined by characteristics that are unique to the particular ego. It begins to travel down safe paths, and out of fear, it continually enlarges the scope of limitations. In the particular personality's case, perception becomes also limited, and rejections occur. In this, as in many such cases, foods are rejected. In many such cases, the ego itself chooses to perceive only within those areas where it feels safe, and rejects more and more any involvement that it can avoid. And now the ego has the self-created ulcer to blame, and it rejects many foods, for foods are symbolic of involvement. When I said earlier that the ulcer was not a part of you, like a leg or an arm, I meant this literally. Because you believe this literally you have allowed the ulcer to become a part of your self-image, in the same manner that an arm or leg is a part of a self-image. And it is this connection that we must and we will cut. When you see that the ulcer does not belong to you in those terms, then indeed you will have no purpose in using your energies to maintain it. It is not part of your heritage. It is not part of the whole self. And now we will see the purpose of the ego in all this is to protect what it considers the self, for the ego considers itself as the only self. But in its overzealous behavior, we find that it is instead threatening the self. Secondary personalities are caused by repressed emotions on a psychological basis that attempts to maintain an ascendancy. Your ulcer is indeed the same sort of growth, but on a physical and not a psychological level. I am going to suggest, first of all, that the material which we have mentioned be read, and then, for a beginning, that psychological time experiments be taken. Joseph M. Rubert, I know, will be glad to take a few moments necessary to explain them. The very involvement of the ego with the inner self will be of great benefit. Nothing would be gained if I told you now that the ego would allow the ulcer to vanish, for there would still be a definite need on your part to understand. And it is indeed the understanding itself which will allow you to let it vanish. I am an educator, and I have been one in various respects for perhaps more centuries than I am willing to admit, and I do not believe in giving easy solutions, for they are worthless. The direct experience in this procedure will indeed be your own, and because it is your own, it will bear fruit. There is more that I will say along these lines as you wish. You may again, at your convenience, end the session or take a break. I am indeed fond of you both, and if I behave in my own fashion, it is because my experience directs me that solutions must come from within, for problems come from within. Very easily, through suggestion, I could cure, so it would seem, your ulcer. You still would have done the curing, but while the need is still there, something else would develop, and so we will show you the way out of the need, for the need is a sham. We will then bring our session to a close. I will say definitely that if my suggestions are followed faithfully and systematically, both the suggestions which I have given and those which I will give, then indeed we will find that the problem is no longer a problem. For in the very quiet and discipline required to follow the problem, those reactions on the part of the personality will set up actions which will of themselves solve the problem, and we will find that also there will be suggestions given, and very important suggestions, whereby a systematic effort will be made on the part of the personality to enlarge the scope of his action in spite of the ego's anxiety to limit them, and this itself will seem to work a miracle. I will here close what can be an extremely productive session. Whether or not it is an extremely productive session will be determined by the personality involved. I would suggest for the psychological time experiments 15 minutes to begin with, along the lines of the directions which Joseph has given. You will find here an intimacy with portions of yourself which you would tend to ignore, which the ego would tend to ignore. You will find indeed refreshment and release. I would suggest that the directions, Joseph, be more specific. You can do better than you have done. Rob notes, Jane looked directly at me. She smiled. Seth, I find myself once more literally blackmailed by your human limitations, since I could indeed go on much longer, but I am indeed in sympathy with your precious fingers and the fatigue of the present group. With Rupert presently, only presently, I have no worries. I will, however, since I presume it is your wish, end the session, though regretfully. My fondest wishes to you all, but you are all indeed like nervous birds perched on a peaked roof in the midst of a high wind, at least this evening, and if I treat you with less politeness, it is only because I speak with the license of an old and trusted friend. Rob, good night, Seth. Rob continues, notes the continuing discussion, conversation. The four of us were discussing the loud voice effects when Seth came through again. The conversation had turned to holding a session at the Gallagher's home in the country, where we would not be concerned with bothering neighbors, as I had been so acutely concerned during the 158th session. Jane resumed at 11:10. Seth, Joseph, I will not continue this session as I understand your reasons for ending it. As I believe I suggested over a year ago, the present witnesses are most beneficial, and I would suggest on some evening when the time is available that we take advantage of their help and hold a session under circumstances that allow us both larger scope in terms of quality and in terms of time. Rob notes, as far back as the 63rd session, Seth had remarked upon the fact that Peg Gallagher would make an excellent witness, since she had well-developed subconscious abilities, see Volume 2. Jane's voice had begun again to turn loud, and I wondered whether we would have more voice effects like those of the 158th session. She began to speak more rapidly, and upon occasion let her voice boom out. But these periods were brief and were quite a bit short of the almost deafening volume she obtained in the 158th session. Strangely enough, her eyes remained closed for most of this closing delivery, opening but once or twice. Seth, for with such witnesses we can indeed do very well. I remember most regretfully your worries the other evening, and I will therefore endeavor, louder, not to give any demonstrations that may be embarrassing to you personally, or indeed that will cause you any uneasiness. I do, however, find myself hampered at times, and it is for this reason that I have made my suggestion. I will indeed now close with my heartiest best wishes to you all, and indeed I will endeavor to lower my voice so that it cannot be said that we are not decorous. But we have been so serious of late, we have dealt with such serious and weighty matters, that I have not had time to make my personality known or to speak with you as I would wish. Because I am so sympathetic, I will then leave you as I found you, in peace and quiet, though indeed there are times after the quiet of our sessions when I would indeed speak with more spontaneity, for I have grown fond, most fond of you both, and therefore I become more willing to display what I may call my more playful nature. I am, after all, more than a fountain of information, forever seeping over with facts for your edification, and I would speak to you in more playful conversation when and if the opportunity presents itself. And Joseph, oh dear Joseph, I would even now, but for your natural reticence, really speak out. Rob notes, Jane stared at me and grinned broadly, and for a second I thought she really was going to sound out. Seth, however, I know too well this serious, and may I say mature, nature of your personality, though it was not so in Denmark. So I will, with my best respects, and with some regrets, close our session. Rob, good night, Seth, ended 11:20. Once again, Bill Gallagher reiterated that he thought he detected a change in Jane's features, particularly about the mouth.